from Mary Flower. You'll probably recognize this.
Quiet as a mouse, Papa climbed up on top of the house. He made a lot of whoopee, he made a lot of noise. Stood up and cheered with the best of the boys. Babies in the grave, brothers gone to town, sisters in the parlor trying on again. Mama's in the kitchen, messing all around. Papa's on the housetop, he won't come down. When the old blues go, babies in the cradle, brothers gone to town, sisters in the parlor trying on again. Mama's in the kitchen, messing all around. Papa's on the housetop, he won't come down. Out in the yard, picked up a rock and he hit him hard. He hit him hard and he killed him dead. Now the chicken's in the gravy and the gravy's on the bread. Baby's in the cradle, brother's gone to town, sister's in the parlor trying on again. Mama's in the kitchen, messing all around. Papa's on the housetop, he won't come down. Don't you cry, the blues is gonna leave you by and by. Papa came in and he sure was cold. Put the baby in the cradle and the blues outdoors. Baby's in the cradle, brother's gone to town, sister's in the parlor trying on again. Mama's in the kitchen, messing all around. Papa's on the housetop, he won't come down. Top of the house, he made a lot of whoopee, he made a lot of noise. He stood up and cheered with the best of the boys. Babies in the cradle, brothers gone to town, sisters in the parlor trying on again. Mama's in the kitchen, messing all around. Papa's on the house top, he won't come down. No, he won't come down.
It's Mary Flower, Papa's on the Housetop. That's a song I always loved growing up. Thanks for the kind words about today's program. A quick note, if you missed last week's segments with pianist Henry Knutson of Morgantown High School and singer-songwriter Erisi Watt, along with Jeremy Ferrara. Both are available on demand at neighborhoodvoices.org, along with lots of other SLB features. Stop by neighborhoodvoices.org, and later this year, we are going to revamp our audio on demand website. We've been working on it for quite a while. We pioneered the ability to deliver audio on demand. We were way ahead of the game when we launched neighborhoodvoices.org almost 15 years ago. And that was before social media, really was a factor. And before other sites like SoundCloud and other places, we came up with our own way of doing it. And we've got a new way that we're excited that it's going to make our audio much easier to search, play, and share. And that'll be later this year. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, the Sound Hound is coming up. Along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. The Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, WSAJ-FM Grove City, WCUC Clarion, WNJR Washington, plus internet radio stations and streaming services everywhere, including slbradio.org/radio.
It was in the morning, a sunny Saturday. I turned on the TV and on the couch I lay. I watched my favorite program and another two or three. When my dad came in the room and said these words to me. Son, turn off the TV, there's lots of things to do. Your bed's not made, the chores aren't done, the sun is shining too. I said, Dad, I'm busy, I gotta watch this show. I guess I should've listened, but how was I to know? 'Cause then he walked across the room and then he pulled the plug. He lifted up the television, he skipped across the rug. He opened up the window, and then I said, Dad, no! He gave the thing a heave, and I watched the TV go. Oh, Dad threw the TV out the window, the window. I think he's finally cracked. Dad threw the TV out the window. I got a feeling that it isn't coming back. Oh, when I saw it go, when I heard the crash, I knew that things at our house would soon be changing fast. My dad looked out the window and he mumbled, my oh my. My brother looked out too and said, I'm gonna die. And that night after dinner, when we went to watch the set, all I found was nothing. I said, how could I forget? My brother fell down on the floor and moaned, what will I do? I said, why don't you move away? He said, the same to you. But then he told a joke, and I told two or three. And the one about the elephants made Dad fall on his knees. My mom did her impression of a duck that couldn't fly, that would have made you wet your pants and maybe even cry. All because Dad threw the TV out the window, the window. I think he finally cracked. Dad threw the TV out the window. I got a feeling that it isn't coming back. Well, life without the TV wasn't what I feared. I didn't really miss it, though some friends thought I was weird. I didn't miss commercials and all the blood and guts and all the stupid shows my brother watched that drove me nuts. But then one sunny Saturday, my dad could not be found. I looked high and low, and from his room I heard a sound. I walked into his room to see what it could be. I found my father hiding there, watching a TV. I said, oh, Dad, not really. You ought to be ashamed. He said kind of sheepishly, I just want to watch the game. I picked up the TV, I waltzed across the room. I gave the thing a heave and I waited for the boom. Oh, I threw the TV out the window, the window. I think I finally cracked. I threw the TV out the window. I got a feeling that it isn't coming back. Oh, I threw the TV out the window, the window. I think I finally cracked. I threw the TV out the window.
Okay, hang on. He's okay. The Sound Hound wants
dogs. He don't know what's wrong.
To get started.
My flea has dogs. My flea has dogs. He don't know what's wrong. Oh, my flea has dogs. Collies, terriers, pugs, and poodles. The leashes get mixed up like noodles. He must have about 99. Afghan longhairs and little cocker spaniels, all of them are named Daisy or Daniel, and all of them are his and none are mine. They yip and yap and howl at the moon. They bark at midnight, bark at noon. When they go parading at the mall, Chihuahuas, Chow Wows, Canadian Pointers all crowd around and obscure their owner. Sometimes you can't see that flea at all. My flea has dogs, you don't know what's wrong. Oh, my flea has dogs, my flea has dogs, you don't know what's wrong. Oh, my flea has dogs.
I think we found our new hit.
And Doberman and Dalmatian, 20 at a time in high rotation. Imagine all the food that they must eat. Italian greyhounds and Irish setters, out in the sunshine or in the wetter weather, they all come running when they hear my flea. A flea with dogs, now that's ridiculous. Even if you were very meticulous, you couldn't find another bug with mutts. Sharp A, Shih Tzu, Shiba Inu, Whippet, Weimaraner, 2x2. How did this little flea get all these pups? My flea has dogs, you don't know it's wrong. Oh, my flea has dogs, my flea has dogs, you don't know it's wrong. Oh, my flea has, oh,
that is
my flea has, oh, my flea has dogs, my flea has dogs.
The artist
flea has dogs.
No, no. The artist known as Casper Baby Pants. And it's time for this morning's Soundhound Puzzle. Soundhound, are you finally ready to go here? Well, I'm glad you are, because I'm not. But I'll be ready in just seconds. 40 of them, to be exact.
The Saturday Light Brigade is made possible, in part, with support from Spatial, providing customizable radio automation software and streaming solutions to radio stations, broadcasters, and businesses around the world since 1999. Additional information is available at spatial.com. That's spacial.com.
Learn about upcoming guests and features first by subscribing to Brigadier Briefings, our free email newsletter. To subscribe, visit slbradio.org/subscribe. Each newsletter includes an original puzzle, links to past programs, and details about youth and adults appearing on the next edition of the Saturday Light Brigade. Get closer to SLB by subscribing at slbradio.org/subscribe.
Well, now it is time for the Soundhound to give you a chance to earn a Saturday Light Brigade charge. The Soundhound, are you here? Of course you are. Let me get the sound from you here. Got it? Back to sleep you go. Here is this weak sound. 412-200-5975. This is one I suspect you either know right away or you won't. 412-200-5975. Do you know it? 1-888-752-7234. SLB Radio or 412-200-5975. Soundhound, one more time.
Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? When I was just a boy, living by the track, us kids would gather up the coal in a big old gunny sack. Then we heard the warning sound as the train pulled into view. The engineer had smile and wave as she went rolling through. She blew so loud and clear, we had to cover up our ears, and we counted cars just as high as we could go. I can almost hear the steam and the big old driver scream with a sound my little boy will never know. Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? I guess the times have changed. Kids are different now. Some don't even seem to know that milk comes from a cow. My little boy can tell the names of all the baseball stars. I remember how he memorized the names on railroad cars. The Wabash and the TP, Lackawanna and the IC. Yeah, the nickel plate, the good old Santa Fe. Just names out of the past, I guess they're fading fast. Every time I hear my little boy say, Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? We climbed into the car and drove down into town, right up to the depot house, but no one was around. We searched the yard together for something I could show, but I knew there hadn't been a train for a dozen years or so. All the things I did when I was just a kid, how far away those old memories appear. I guess it's plain to see they still mean a lot to me, 'cause my ambition was to be an engineer. Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train?
Sunday every June, I'm on the road back home to celebrate the finest man I've ever known. I bought a tie he won't wear, a silly card to make him laugh. You can bet he'll have a few new jokes if I know my old man. I'm heading home for Father's Day to hear him tell it like it was, back when a man knew who to fight and who to trust. The world needs sense, he'll say to me, in the good old used to be. Or at least it seemed that way in my father's day. One job for 40 years, one house and one wife. The kind of thing you seldom see in modern life. I love hearing his rose-colored memories. I've heard them all 100 times, but there's no place I'd rather be. I'm heading home for Father's Day to hear him tell it like it was, back when a man knew who to fight and who to trust. The world needs sense, he'll say to me, in the good old used to be. Or at least it seemed that way in my father's day. I live my life so I can face him every year when I embrace him. I thank him for showing me the way. I'm heading home for Father's Day to hear him tell it like it was, bag when a man knew who to fight and who to trust. The world made sense, he'll say to me, in the good old used to be. Or at least it seemed that way in my father's day. In my father's day. Third Sunday every June, I'm on the road back home.
Craig Bickhart at the Saturday Light Brigade. The song called Father's Day. And Utah Phillips did Daddy, What's a Train? I mentioned this. Trying to remember who I mentioned this to earlier this week. But if you like Utah Phillips, you can catch Loafer's Glory, his legendary radio program, recast as a podcast series. Available on most places you look for podcasts. They've done a nice job with it. We've had a lot of guesses regarding our sound so far. Only a couple correct answers. Matt, that would be Caden's dad, Matt, got it. And Annie called to let us know. Caden had a good guess. Caden thought it might be a robot that collects leaves in the fall and turns them into big leaf cubes. It's not that, but that's a great guess. I'll bet your art is amazing, Caden. I would think so. But it's not that. Kathy in Youngstown thought it might be a toy robot, a 2XL toy robot. It's not. John in Carrick was somebody who thought it might be a phone dialing. And let's let you hear that song, or that song, that sound again. Ross and King, North Carolina, got it exactly correct. Tegan in the North Hills, good morning, Tegan. Tegan says that Otis thinks it could be a phone. And this sound could be just about anything, but there is a particular context in which it's used that we're looking for. Jim in Crafton Heights thought of Pac-Man, and Rich in Edinburgh thought of dial-up internet. And indeed, that is kind of what it sounded like, dial-up internet, what it still does sound like if it's used anywhere. Bruce says, this sound is so familiar. Is it the scanner Dr. McCoy used on Star Trek? You're getting warmer, I think. At least warmer in terms of where you've heard the sound emanating from. Larry, who's enjoying himself at a music festival this morning, also thought it might be the sound of dial-up. Ty in Squirrel Hill. Ha ha, Ty, you just got the correct answer. Well done. And Ricky says that Carla has got it. I'm not surprised. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. I should mention that Brian thought it might be the sound of a phone dialing as well. You came up with this, and once you know it, it's kind of obvious, but until you know it, it's not, is it?
Well, no, you know, and it's funny. When I first heard it, I'm like, I know this. It's so familiar, and then it just snapped, and it came into my head.
And what is it?
It is the sounder that emanates right before they give you the Jeopardy clues.
Right. It's let's see the categories on the board. Exactly. There are a lot of very peculiar sounds in Jeopardy, like this one. That's for when you run out of time or when you hit the daily double. The Sound Hound had a lot of time to think this week.
Yeah, that's the daily double sound.
But this is the one you hear.
First round, the Jeopardy round.
There's a sample.
Where do you get those sounds? You know, I play Jeopardy in my classroom as review games for my languages, and I'd love to have those sounds.
Well, we just used some of our broadcast pals to help us find those. But I'll bet they're online somewhere, too. But the board would fill up. There it is. And there's always great sounds to hear. Jeopardy's still really a fun show. Something I didn't know, but is not at all surprising. Merv Griffin wrote the theme to Jeopardy and ended up banking over $80 million before he passed in royalties just from the theme song alone. Isn't that incredible to think of?
It is, yes. I'm reading a book about Jeopardy. I've read a couple of books about Jeopardy and, you know, about the game and everything. It's just the most fascinating history and, you know, the little ins and outs about things and how it evolved. And I use Jeopardy in my classroom when I'm teaching foreign languages and even for my classes of adults and homeschoolers. At the end, I'll give them clues. I'll tell them, now you study these categories, and it gets pretty competitive. And then I try to pit students of like abilities against one another. I pick the teams and I arrange them so that it's really competitive, and they enjoy that so much. And I've recorded some of the sounds off of the television, and I use them actually.
Oh, that's terrific. And I know there are websites that have some of these sounds that you can just use. So they're out there somewhere. You can fill up the board. And, you know, when time's up, it's up. So.
I'm pretty primitive. I use flashcards, and then I have recordings of sounds, like when I have animals, you hear a dog. And by the way, Sparky loved that, my flea has dogs.
Oh.
He was bent out of shape because he was afraid they weren't going to mention Shih Tzu, and finally they did.
They did. They even mentioned Italian Greyhound. They had a lot of breeds in that song. Well, Carla, thank you. It's good to talk to you, and you're one of the few. We had a correct answer also from Russ. And from Matt, and I think that's it, at least as far as the ones I know of. So well done.
You know, when you're totally blind, you depend on sounds, and you think about sounds a lot more because your eyes are your ears. And so I don't know if that went into it or not, but sounds are very important to me. And that's why the Sound Hound game is one of my favorites, I'll tell you.
I'm glad. A lot of folks love the Sound Hound. They keep him on all... on all of his toes.
Yes.
Even those
Sparky.
Even those toes that, you know, are part way up his ankle. But they keep him going.
Sparky could be sleeping, and then he just perks right up when that part of the show comes on. You start wrestling with the Sound Hound for the sound, and so cute. You'd love Sparky.
Thanks, Carla. You tell him my best, and Sparky would be reminding me that we haven't watered the dog or fed him, so we better give him a little water given the heat.
Oh, yes. What's the Sound Hound's name? Does he have a name?
He doesn't. Well, his name is Sound Hound. But,
okay.
Or Boy, the universal boy, you know, here boy kind of dog. But we should really give, maybe we'll have a contest to name the Sound Hound.
I vote for Sparky. I'm like,
Sparky, we could name him after. I like it. We could name him after
Sparky the Sound Hound.
Sparky the Sound Hound might work.
There's some alliteration there.
There's alliteration, and Sparky and radio have, people in the military often have been called Sparky. So Maybe that's it. Sparky. Does it? We'll see if that sticks, as they say.
Okay. See if he comes when he's called.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Give him a pat for me and a hug from Sparky, okay?
We'll have to get our lawyers to look at copyright issues, too. So.
Yeah. Well, if there's copyright issues, I'm in trouble because Sparky's name is Sparky. In fact, he has a Latin middle name. His middle name is Scintilla, which means little spark in Latin. So I call him Sparky Scintilla Hayes.
I like it. Thank you, Carla. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. And congratulations to you. If you knew that we were looking for none other than the sound of the Jeopardy board filling up. I'm taking a moment now to get ready for an important guest. I'm thrilled that we have Dana Gold with us today. We're going to talk about World Refugee Day. Hi, Dana.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. It's nice to have you here with us today. And I know World Refugee Day is going to be taking place on Monday along with Juneteenth, and I'd love to learn more about its celebration. It'll be at Chinle Plaza, I believe, 4 to 8 o'clock, right?
Exactly. It's our first year doing it in that location because we wanted to really involve as many families as we could and people after work. Usually been downtown in Market Square, so this will be a little bit more accessible. We're going to close the streets so people can bike. There's going to be puppets and craft activities and even a film about a family who came to this country and opened up a chocolate shop. So a sweet story about the way in which refugees bring their skills and ambitions and strengths to our country and make us a sweeter place to be. So there's going to be lots of fun things to do. Even the carousel is going to be free, and there's going to be food opportunities from other cultures and vendors. And we're really excited to celebrate with Pittsburgh, which is the home of lots of people coming from all over the world. And sometimes we don't remember that. So World Refugee Day is about celebrating the gifts and the strengths and the wonderful richness that people bring with them when they come to our country. But it's also about learning about the hard journey that people take to this country. No one ever wants to be a refugee. That's not something that anyone aspires to. No one wants to have to leave their home. They say, no one runs to the ocean, to the water, unless their house is on fire. You know, that leaving a difficult and terrible and scary place to get someplace safe sometimes takes a lot of effort. And it's very, very hard. And so, we also want to learn from refugees about how important peace is and how, we can avoid the conflicts that people come from, and to remember that we need to be welcoming to people who come from places that are hard and sometimes scary, and so that they have someplace safe to bring their families, their children, and to find joy again and to contribute in ways that make us richer and the world a little bit more closely knit together. So that's what World Refugee Day is about, and we're really excited to have people come and join us down at Chinle Plaza on Monday from 4 to 8.
I've been looking at the schedule as you have so eloquently been describing World Refugee Day, and I would encourage people consider going to the website, which you would think I could see these letters better. I think is it lsacpittsburgh.org?
No.
No, that's an I.
Right. Well, we do have also on our website, jfcs, WPGH.org.
Oh, good.
I actually forgot to say that's where I'm from. I work for Jewish Family and Community Services, and we're the oldest refugee resettlement agency in the region and the largest as well. And we've been resettling refugees from around the world here in Pittsburgh since 1937.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know. That's a commitment to sheltering those who come from hard places. And so we have done this work. It's work of our heart. And you can go to our website and you can learn more about World Refugee Day so that you can come and learn and be with people from all around the world who will be there as well. It's our way also of showing people, refugees who've come from everywhere, that we're curious about them, that we are interested in what's going on, that this demonstrates to the people who are refugees who come here from places of difficulty that we are celebrating their presence in our midst. And even though it was a really hard journey, we are here to welcome and to explore and to be curious and to be welcoming so that the riches and the talents and the skills and the personalities of people who come from everywhere make us a stronger and better community.
Excellent. And a lot of folks have the day off Monday. That's the federal or bank holiday for Juneteenth. Juneteenth celebrations have been going on starting last night and today and tomorrow. But June 20th, World Refugee Day, Schenley Park is the place to go. And before, when I said ASAC, I wanted to be sure I just made it clear that's Immigrant Services and Connections.
Isaac.
Yeah.
Isaac is also a service that's provided through a collaboration with other nonprofit partners that work with immigrants from around the region. And Isaac helps people who have barriers to language or culture to get the resources they need. So you never know. Just imagine, you know, if we were plopped down in the middle of Afghanistan and we didn't know the language and we didn't know how schools work or banks worked or anything. And so Isaac is kind of like your concierge. It helps you understand where to get the help you need and how things work in the new community where you're living. So that's what Isaac is about.
Thank you for that clarity, too. So lots of resources, Jewish Family and Community Services. Their website will be a good portal if you want to find out more about the events and more about services. World Refugee Day, June 20th, 4 to 8 o'clock at Schenley Plaza. Dana, it's so good to talk to you. Thank you for being with us today. And
absolutely.
Hope to talk to you soon. Take care.
Yes, you be well.
Broadcasting live, you too, from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings on a network of great community radio stations, plus internet radio stations and streaming services, the likes of whom include Tube City Online at WNCK.FM, McKeesport, KRDP, Indy Community Radio, Phoenix, Arizona, Loudspeaker 1, Fort Collins, Colorado, and slbradio.org/radio.
Some folks think it's cool to have some kind of lover. He don't believe it's true, cause he just found another. And when you see him, you might see him on the street. He walks with rhythm, cause he got some kind of beat. Lord, he kicks his heels a bit, his suit's a perfect fit. He knocks him out, and though he seems alone, somebody wants my phone. They want to shout, he's a walking, running, only, and they're calling him by name. He won't be leaving town till he can cop some fame. They don't know what it takes, but it's the reason why. The girls all smile at him as he goes walking by. Lordy, big bear. He knocks me out, and though he seems alone, somebody wants him on the phone. They want to shout, he's walking, running, lonely, and you know that he's on fire. Don't try to warn me, girl, cause he's my heart desire. You take your heroes and you put them up beside him. It ain't no contest as the one and only riding.
Maria Muldaur,
yeah,
singing a song about Dan Hicks that he also sang.
Come and listen, you fellas, so young and so fine, and seek not your fortune in the dark, dreary mine. It will form as a habit, seep in your soul, till the stream of your blood runs as black as the coal. It's dark as a dungeon and damp as the dew, where the danger is double and the pleasures are few, where the rain never falls and the sun never shines. It's dark as a dungeon way down in the mine.
Well, it's our pleasure today to take a moment and have a little pop-up guest segment. And we have a multidisciplinary artist and writer, Sean Slifer, with us. Sean, I should have asked you, did I get that right?
You did.
Okay,
you did,
not
yeah.
Slifer, but Slifer. I should just quit while I'm ahead when I take those guesses. Sean is here with us. We're going to talk a bit about his work, but also about the West Virginia Mine Wars Museum. And I'd like to start there because I don't know much about the museum. What can you tell us about it?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So the West Virginia Mine Wars Museum is a small people's history museum in the southern West Virginia coal fields. So we're all the way down in Mingo County in a town called Matewan. And we're a real live museum. We focus on about a 20-year period from, say like 1900 to 1921 on a series of struggles for human rights, basically, and to form a union in the southern West Virginia coal fields, which were, you know, deeply held by private industry at that time, and in some cases, in some ways, still is today. And the culmination of this period is called the Mine Wars, and the culmination of the Mine Wars period is the Battle of Blair Mountain in the late summer of 1921. Which we often say was the largest armed labor uprising in the United States, largest armed uprising since the American Civil War. To give you some sense of the scale, so thousands of unionizing coal miners clashing with privatized forces in the employ of the coal companies. And we tell these stories. We tell these stories that have been excluded from textbooks actually for generations.
I was just thinking about that. perhaps growing up, I may recall the Homestead Strike as sort of a sidebar in a textbook, maybe. But certainly, I didn't learn anything about conditions that miners face or about issues such as the one you're describing. And I would imagine West Virginians didn't learn about these issues either.
Often that's true. I think organized labor and unions are sort of excluded from textbooks, broadly speaking, right? So it's not just the story of the mine wars, but I think stories of collective organizing, generally speaking, are not widely taught.
So tell me how you got involved with this.
A couple different ways, actually. It's interesting. Some through my tangential relationship to regional environmental movement through activism and political printmaking. But then also as a wage laborer, I've been working in several galleries and museums around Pittsburgh for about 16 years. So I had a lot of I wore a lot of hats when I got involved, right? So, like, I helped us build walls and drywall, but I also, as the creative director now, I design our exhibits, which means I handle artifacts and choose paint colors and sort of build all that stuff out. So I got involved because I had that skill set and I had some connection to some movement that was going on in the region already. And then I'm a history nerd. I'm a sort of community-taught historian of a type.
Well, and it sounds like where you were heading and talking about your own work, whether it be gig work or hourly work, you've got some solidarity and common connections to how you've been treated.
That's right.
As a worker as well.
Maybe not so much as being a coal miner in 1900.
Well, true. Very true. It's something, you know, I don't know if you know of the short miniseries called Dope Sick that was out recently. And Ricky and I were watching it, and Dope Sick is about the oxycodone crisis. Hmm. But you also get to see it through the eyes of a lot of coal miners who are in the area. And I thought it did a fairly good depiction of what working in a mine can look like. Even today, it is not work for the weary. It is a really hard job. To do that kind of work. I've known some miners, so having this museum is really important. Is it hard to get to?
You do have to be headed to Mate One. I mean, it's not next door to anything that you were already on your way to, but yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a trek. I drive down there right now about once a month, and it's, you know, it takes me like 7 hours or something to get down there. So it's become a home away from home for me. But I always encourage people to take the time to visit. And I think you're right. Coal mining is still hard labor, and the union struggle still continues. There's been a strike on in Brookwood, Alabama. For over a year now, miners have been on strike, UMWA miners, for a better contract and better conditions.
Wow. I just went to the website, which is WV for West Virginia, minewars.org. And the first thing up there is Mate One National Bank.
That's the building we're in now, yeah.
I never knew the city was that evolved, so to speak. You think of Mate One, oh, this must be like a company town with shacks and business and... if that's where you are, I would imagine there's a town around.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well. Mate One was actually an independent town. It was one of the few in the region that wasn't a company owned town, which is one reason why a lot of it, I think, survives today. Although there's significant flooding through the 70s and 80s that destroyed a lot of the town, but the union local UMWA 1440 bought that building, the old Mate One National Bank, when it went up for sale about 3 years ago. This huge what was kind of like a miniature Wall Street, you know, when it was built a few decades ago. And that's what we've moved the museum into, actually.
Now, I'm curious. I would imagine that Mountain State residents and miners have become engaged with this building that is here to honor their heritage. How have you cultivated that to make that happen? Because that's tricky, right?
Yeah, trust and community building is really tricky. I mean, so my role, especially as an outsider, is a lot of listening. I mean, I didn't just come in with ideas about here's what we're going to do. I came in and listened and worked with community members for a couple of years before we first opened. It's a slow process, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of folks just, you have to make a choice to go to a museum, right? Like, it's not the kind of, I don't even always go. I went with a friend to see a show at the Carnegie Museum of Art earlier this week, and we were both kind of laughing about how we live, you know, 5-10 minutes away, and we barely go to the museum. So we are in many ways developing an aura around what we do that resonates strongly with people who live close by, who haven't actually visited the museum. That they're getting a sense that we're a place of where we keep and share stories and important objects and sort of try to keep the history alive.
Have miners or families brought you artifacts?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sort of our de facto collections manager too, so I manage all of the kind of incoming stuff and photograph and catalog it.
What are some of the things? You don't have to single one out, or necessarily even the best or oldest or most interesting, but just the kinds of things that come in.
So some of the things that are brought to us by family and community members tend to be headlamps that their grandfather or great-grandfather wore in the mines. So we have a huge collection of carbide-fueled acetylene torch headlamps. But a significant part of our collection is actually a kind of people's archaeology that developed on the Blair Mountain battlefield. So there was has been a long, protracted struggle to save the mountain ridge itself from mountaintop removal strip mining. And as part of that struggle, there's been a lot of archaeological work that's happened to sort of, in the initial stages, just to prove that there had been a battle there. So we have a ton of you know, mostly these are ammunition casings that have been found because the metal is what survives. But you know that this battle happened, and then the mountains, you know, the leaves fell down over 100 years, and then the stuff is just 2 or 3 inches under the ground all over the place. So
do you have things like pay stubs or script? I would imagine.
Yeah, we do have a lot of script coins. Yeah, the private money that coal miners were paid in. We have a pretty interesting collection of that stuff.
Can you explain how that works? Some people, surprisingly, may not know just the concept, let alone the detail.
So scrip is a form of currency that individual coal mine companies produce to pay their workers. So if you moved into a company town, this is a town that was built and developed by a single coal company around the mouth of a coal mine that they were hiring you to work in, you'd move your family into a house that was owned by that company, and then you were paid in money that company issued privately, not U.S. currency, and then that was only redeemable at a company-owned grocery store. So you have a completely closed system here. You can't take your wages to another town. You're sort of beholden to the prices set at the store and the wages, etc. So these coins are quite strange. They were issued by several just, you know, kind of private coin minting companies that would make them. And there's paper script too. We actually don't have any of that, but there was some paper script, and we have probably about 150 of these coins. There's an online exhibit of them right now called 16 Tons that if you go to our website, you can see the whole catalog for coin nerds.
Wow. It'd be like being today being paid an Amazon gift card. That's probably the best.
Well, the idea hasn't really gone away in some sectors. Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
It's attractive to employers, I think.
In fact, I'm sure, I don't know the details, but I'm sure if you work For some retail shops, you get huge discounts on things, and even some factories, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Auto workers would get certain discounts on cars, probably in lieu of better wages. How about oral histories and things like that? Have you begun to... there probably are some that were done already, but no, I'm just guessing, but no focal point for their storage. Maybe some libraries. But
there are some libraries and archives that have them, yeah. I think it's true to say that there's not a central database where anyone has collected, like, where you're going to go find them. But I will say, like, there was a lot of good work done at times in the last... I think about 50 years or so, where people recognize, you know, some of the descendants that lived through this stuff are not going to live that much longer, and we need to do their recordings. So it hasn't yet been a focus of ours, but we have a very active board, right? So there's some people on our board who are very invested in oral histories that have been sort of building.
Any industrial people representing mine owners? Are they showing any interest in the museum? And I don't want to put you on the spot, but as noted on your website, this is an unusual case where we talk about in journalism, comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. This is a case where the afflicted are comforting themselves in some ways, I think, because the story is being told by those who lived it and experienced it.
Sure.
Sure. And I would hope these days some more empathy is growing from the broader world, but maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, coal can be a tricky one because we're phasing out a lot of coal-fired power plants. I think, you know, this is an interesting point about the strike that's ongoing in Alabama right now. I think is not getting a lot of coverage because it's seen as environmentally kind of untouchable because people are still mining coal. I think a lot of Americans are surprised that there's people still mining coal, but that's coal that the coal that they're mining there is actually tied to the steel industry, so that's going to continue, I think, to be used for quite a while. So there's, I mean, maybe there is some empathy, but I also think that to some degree people don't realize that some of these jobs still exist if they don't live in the region. A lot of people don't pay attention to Central Appalachia generally if they don't live there. Could be said for a lot of other regions in the country.
No, but you're right. We don't think about Appalachia at all, at least by and large, we don't. We have a few minutes remaining. I want to be sure we talk about your artwork and your writing a bit. Can you share some info about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is all part of my art practice, really. I mean, I think I meld a lot of things together. So I currently have a collaborative project on exhibit at the Carnegie Natural History Museum in the Hall of North American Wildlife, which is very different in many ways from my work at the West Virginia Mine Wars Museum, and it's another piece that I think people wouldn't necessarily think was an art piece at first, but it's a penny smashing machine that is in the middle of the Hall of Wildlife that I built with my collaborator Stuart Anderson. He's really the engineer of the two of us. And this penny smashing machine addresses extinction, adaptation of wildlife in the United States and North America.
And does it actually smash pennies?
Yeah. So you come up and you can put four quarters in it, and you pick both sides of your penny that are going to be smashed. One side, you pick a critically endangered or extinct animal, and these illustrations are all by different artists. And then on the other side, you pick tracks, paw prints, or silhouettes of urban adapters, so animals that we're familiar with, white-tailed deer, crow, groundhogs.
Mm-hmm.
And you make your own pairing, and then you put four quarters and a penny in, and it slides down a slot, and then you turn a big crank, and you smash your penny, just like any other souvenir penny smashing machine, except ours is a sculpture in the middle of the Natural History Museum. And they've been amazing to work with, too. I mean, it was exciting to be able to bring an art project into an unexpected place like that. And then there's a couple of exhibit cases that I co-curated with Nicole Heller, who's a curator there, and their collection staff. So there's specimens from the museum that don't get seen that relate to the animals that are on the pennies that you can smash.
Are there other coal mining focused museums? I seem to I seem to remember one off of 79 that is devoted to a particular incident. I can't think of the name of it, but I've stopped at it to look at it.
There's a lot of memorials to disasters, and there's a lot. I mean, yeah, there's one at a rest stop actually when you enter into Pennsylvania on 79. And then, there's quite a few small museums here and there. We're the only ones that talk about the stories that we do. We're the first to do that, to independently focus on that.
Tell me about your writing.
So as I said, I'm a history nerd. I write mostly nonfiction. I published a book last spring with West Virginia University Press that's about Appalachian Movement Press, which was a leftist activist print shop in Huntington, West Virginia, that operated throughout the 1970s. And this was just, I have a generally a theme in my work of trying to dig up stories that no one else has kind of hacked away at. And so this was that. I found out about this press. I knew about activist movement presses across the United States in that era in the 1970s, but I'd never heard about one from Central Appalachia at all. And so I started trying to find these folks, and eventually a book developed out of it. It's called So Much to Be Angry About.
Wow. That sounds, and that's West Virginia University Press.
That's right, yeah.
Excellent. I wish we had more time. Sean Slifer, it's S-L-I-F-E-R, and the West Virginia Mine Wars Museum. We've linked to it from slbradio.org, but you can also find it at wvminewars.org. Is there anything else that you'd like to say that I might not have given you a moment to jump in and say?
You can support our museum by becoming a member, and you can see my penny smasher for another couple of days. It comes down on Monday, and shout out to the United Museum Workers Union and the UMWA.
Excellent. Thank you for being with us today, and best wishes for continued success.
Thanks a lot.
Like you and me.
thank you for the kind words about the West Virginia mine wars.
Miner, they will slave you, taking work no more. And what do you get for a living? But a dollar at the company store, a tumble down shack to live in, snow and rain pours in the top. You have to pay the company rent, and your pain it never stops.
That is Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn.
I am a coal miner's wife. I'm sure I wish you well. Let's sink this capitalist system in the darkest pits of hell.
We played an older version of that song last week, but that is from their album, which is called Echo in the Valley, here at the Saturday Light Brigade. It's birthday time, and our apologies for being a little tardy with birthdays. Barbara, happy birthday to you from husband Jack. Happy birthday to Kirsten of South Old New York. From the other girls, Megan, Susanna, Penny, and Pete. Also today we have Mo Shea of Butler from Grandma Shirley and Harmony. And Sarah. Sarah Ziplack, are you there? Happy birthday to you. Not quite playing with a full deck yet. Almost the pinnacle deck. Not yet. Happy birthday to you and Alita Scott and Wyatt. Happy birthday to Ryan tomorrow from Dad Jack. And to Edward from Brother Richard and your parents. Michael of Penn Hills. John of Wolfboro, New Hampshire. Marianne from your family. Bob of Greensburg. And Annie. Happy birthday to you, Annie. Hello, Roanoke. Hello, Roanoke, the duck. And hello to Kurt. On the 20th, we have Martin of Highland Park, Sherry. Elias of Kennerdale for Mom and Dad and Ivy. Anna of Shadyside for Mom and Dad. Joan from Lisa. And Cynthia and William. Nino of Bellevue from your family. Camille of McCandless from your whole family, and Evan of Hampton, and Kelly of Mount Lebanon on the 21st, this coming Tuesday, Amelia of Highland Park, from Sophia and Brian and Maureen, Christopher of Westview, Caitlin from Ralph and Marianne, Bill from your family, Kristen of Dormont from Brian, Colin, and Lucy, Joan of Cranberry from Greg and your extended family and your children, Alexis of Denora from Mom and Dad and Leaf, and happy anniversary to Pam and Vaughn of Youngwood from Louise and Keith and Heather. On Wednesday, we have Paul of Salzburg and Hayden from your family. On Thursday, the 23rd of June, Larkin from Mom and Dad and also Otis. Happy birthday to you, Larkin. Hello. And happy birthday to Anthony of Pleasant Hills. Larkin, by the way, if I'm doing my computations right, is almost a full hand, well, a full hand of fingers. The thumb will be next time around. Thomas of the South Hills from Mommy and Daddy, and George, Judy from husband Dick and daughter Megan, Devin of Moon, and Ollie from Rose. And on the 24th, we have Elsie of Belle Vernon, the great Saul Markowitz, Sally of Emsworth, Martha of Macon, Georgia, from Colleen, and finally, Adam of Spring Garden from wife Teresa and sons Sammy and Leo. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger